go on the normal radio. Free weed. Free weed. Oh, yo. Danny Danko come to show you how it grows. You're now tuned in to Free Weed from Danny Danko on Normal Radio, presented by High Times Magazine. See me, I say, boom, bang. Big respect. See me, I say, Danny Danko.
All right, welcome to episode 39. Thank you, all, as always, to DJ Jacques and Winstrong for the song. Jacques put together the music, produced the record. Winstrong sings the tune, so thank you so much for that. People always singing that theme song when I'm walking around these cannabis cups and stuff, so thank you again.
It haunts me. It's what I hear before I fall asleep at night. It's really getting in my head.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So anyways, episode 39, we have quite a interesting show for you guys. We're going to be running the Denver panel, the long-lost Denver panel, with Aaron from DNA Genetics, Adam from TH Seeds, DJ Short, Kyle Cushman, and Scott from Rare Dankness. Very epic panel that we had. We talked a lot about growing, about breeding, about all kinds of subject matter regarding cannabis seeds, cannabis growing in order to grow connoisseur quality cannabis. So, yeah, and we're just back from Amsterdam and Spain, Mike and I, where we did some videos and some
stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah. So this will be like an extended intro, because usually we do a brief intro and then come back. But we're gonna break down
because the show is just a panel.
We have the panel show, yeah. But we also after this have a segment with comedian Rob Cantrell,
yes,
which we're excited about. Yeah. So we'll just give you the extended intro and then we'll get things rolling. Yes, we are just back from Amsterdam and Spain as well. It was a great time, a lot of fun over there.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to hang with a bunch of the people, the breeders who make the seeds over there, and go to a bunch of the coffee shops. It's one of the few trips I've had to take over there that wasn't during a cannabis cup. So
yeah, it was the spring. Of course, it was 45 and rainy almost every single day, but yeah, it was the spring.
Yeah, and then so we got to go to Barcelona, and the weather there was beautiful.
Very
we
nice.
Were there for a couple of days, got to visit the Hash, Marijuana, and Hemp Museum, which is in a beautiful building, historic building there in Barcelona.
And we're going to do some photo galleries of all of these things at some point.
Yep.
But before that, if you're interested, you could check out on HighTimes.com right now. Dan and I put together a little travel tip video, and it's pretty cool. It has some cameos by Big Buddha and Soma as well, so please do check that out, and more videos to come.
Yeah, I'm writing an article about it now as well, and we had a lot of fun over there. The Cannabis Cup number 26 is coming up in November, so...
And of course, we did the audio walking tour of coffee
shop.
Yeah,
we're doing project. We've got a big project coming. It's a toking tour of Amsterdam coffee shops, basically an audio podcast that you can listen to that'll take you through a bunch of the different coffee shops. And so, yeah, we're excited. That's what we were over there. We got to see Barcelona. We got to go to a cannabis club, private cannabis clubs in Spain, which
was
very,
very cool experience.
Yeah,
it's members only, but it's like they have pretty good weed there. The weed there was on par, if not better, than the weed in Amsterdam, I thought.
Yeah.
And it's a very cool scene. They have over 300 of these things in Barcelona alone.
Yeah, yeah. And the private club model is very interesting. So we got to check that out. That was fun. And we're about to go to San Francisco for the Cannabis Cup, June 22 and 23.
22 and 23, that is coming up real
That's in,
quick.
That's in Richmond, California, at the same venue as last year. The
members of Wu-Tang Clan performing?
GZA, my favorite. One of my favorite rappers of all time, the genius GZA, is performing. Raekwon, the chef from the Wu-Tang Clan, and...
Ghostface Killah.
Who
second
performed,
Ghostface Killah.
In Amsterdam last year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wu-Tang, you
it's
know, they are not to be fucked with, so...
No, not at all.
So,
of course, I'm going to be stage managing that show, and I will try not to fuck with them.
Yeah,
because
that's probably your best bet.
Because they ain't nothing to fuck with.
Yeah.
So I shall not fuck with them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's exciting. If you want more information on that, you could head to medcancup.com, get all the info there.
Yeah, we're going to be taping a live episode of Free Weed there. I've got quite a panel assembled for San Francisco, or I guess we should call it the Bay Area, because we're over there in Richmond. And I hope to see you there. I'm going to have some stickers in my pocket. If people mention Free Weed, I'll give you a free sticker. and hopefully we can chat and yeah.
Let's just quickly, before we move on to Rob Cantrell, let's talk a little bit about the new issue that's on sale right now. It's the August 2013 issue, and it looks like a pretty good one. It's got a little red, white, and blue theme to it.
Yeah, Tangi on the cover. Tangi, the winner in Denver. And
you can't get away from Tangi right now.
Popular DNA. Yeah, Tangi's a big strain for 2013. And it's got our coverage of that Denver Cup, the first U.S. Cannabis Cup ever. It's got a story that Nico and I collaborated on about American breeders.
And speaking of that, almost everybody that you mentioned that was on your panel in this upcoming episode is pretty much featured in the American Kings of Cannabis article.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And that story is basically, you know, many years back or even a decade ago, if you wanted the best bud, you would go to Amsterdam and that would be the primo stuff. But right now, it's pretty undeniable. California, Colorado, other places in the States, that's the epicenter of marijuana.
Right.
And these are the guys who are doing it, the breeders who are standout.
Yeah, and genetics from America really kind of changed the scene in Holland as well. So, you know, and over many, many times. So, yeah, that's the new epicenter for sure. We got an interview in here with Entourage's Adrian Grenier, Vincent Chase from the HBO show Entourage. He has a movie about called How to Make Money Selling Drugs, a documentary about the drug war.
Yeah, it's interesting because he definitely, he's a guy, you know, he's opposed to the drug war. He's doing what he can to kind of combat it, but he's not really ready to embrace weed. That's my opinion from reading that interview.
Right, but Entourage as a show, I think, was one of the first shows to just show marijuana use as it really is, which is just a part of people's lives. That's, you know, like Turtle would just be the weed guy and they were all constantly smoking and then going and doing things, and that's kind of how the reality of the stoner lifestyle is. That's never been seen really on TV before, that just kind of commonality of marijuana in people's lives, you know, particularly if you're like rich and famous and young.
Yeah, it's a good combination. And also, LSD apparently is turning 70,
mm-hmm.
So there's some coverage on the history of that drug and sort of what we could still learn about it from it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, the Denver coverage, too, includes like Slightly Stupid and Cypress Hill at Red Rocks and all the cup winners. And yeah, it's a great issue.
Agreed. So pick it up. What do you say? Take a little break. Come back with comedian Rob Cantrell.
Yes. All right, and we're here now, back.
Yeah,
we've
got a very special guest here in the studio, in the brand new studio space here at High Times headquarters.
Rob Cantrell.
Oh, wow, I love that guy.
Welcome, Rob, welcome.
Thanks for being here.
Brooklyn-based comedian extraordinaire.
Yes, that's true, extraordinaire.
Veteran of the Marijuana Logs.
Yeah, I performed with those guys, that's true.
Last Comic Standing, first season,
that is true, I was on
top
that program.
Top 10 finalist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Recently, you may have seen him on the Colbert Report,
yep,
lighting up his shoe, smoking some pipes on the Colbert Report.
That was a good gig, man. I hadn't had a showbiz shot, as they say, like a good break in a while.
Yeah.
Last Comic Standing was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I was touring with the Marijuana Logs and doing a lot of stand-up, but that Colbert thing came out of nowhere. So
that's awesome.
That's what they call a shot in the arm. I got a little showbiz shot.
Right on. And yeah, let's talk about marijuana in New York City. It's kind of like a new day. I see these vapor pens everywhere. People are puffing on the streets. Like,
yeah, we just read last week that the arrests have gone down, but you famously were busted for smoking weed in New York City, right?
2007, it was not as nice as it is now.
No.
I did 3 nights in jail, yeah.
Three nights for smoking a joint.
2 nights, 1 day, like 3 days.
Not cool.
Yeah,
not cool.
Not cool at all.
I mean, seriously, Bloomberg, Giuliani, that is not a good look for you guys.
No, not at
all.
You
know, particularly Bloomberg. Giuliani is like, yeah, of course. That's what you expect out of Giuliani. But Bloomberg, bro.
Loves weed.
Yeah, loves weed in his heart. And then just recently he came out and said that medical marijuana was a scam. Man, that's some bumbaclot bullshit right there from Bloomberg.
Bumba Bloomberg. Yeah, man.
So are you smoking on the street still? Did you learn your lesson? How's that going for you?
I think it's gotten looser is what I've seen. Like, there definitely was a time when I was super scared ever to, like, smoke after a show on the street. But I haven't been hearing about comics or people, you know, entertainers getting busted at shows or after shows. Like, it seems to be like New York's starting to ease up on the whole arresting people. I can't tell you to go out and smoke a joint in the middle of Times Square, but I know it's not as brutal as it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, man, and the vape pens play a huge role in that too, because it's just discreet. I see people on the subway train hitting those on. Yeah. So wild.
With New York, if you got a vaporizer, an iPhone, an unlimited Metro card, you're literally flying through space around this place, man.
Yep. Now, did you become more active as far as, like, as an activist after that? Like, that's what happened.
Yeah, I think that's the relationship that I get with you guys. I mean, I was always a pot smoker, but I think with that story and just being in New York, and I just came back from San Francisco and L.A., and I was living out there, so I just was not used to, like, how hardcore the laws are here. And so people should know, like, it's no joke still here in New York City. Like, you can get in a lot of trouble for smoking on the street or getting busted with some weight.
Well, that's what we're that's basically what we're seeing, is that the arrests went down from 50,000 a year to 40,000 a year. So, yeah, it's 10,000 less, but still 40,000 arrests a year. Like, cool. So New Amsterdam needs to step up and legalize, because we would crush it here.
That's what this town needs, man.
I know.
We got the
New
city
Amsterdam.
Bikes.
Yeah, we got city bikes. We got Brooklyn Bridge Park over there.
Dude, like, the parks are killing it right now, man. Vape pens. Like, I always said that I think that we should get rid of cars on Manhattan. Manhattan's just this big rock island, you know? I think it should just be all skateboards and chairlifts.
Bikes.
Water slides. Because
you got the height. You could go building to building on water slides and really, really have a fun time in the city.
I love water slides.
Yeah.
When was the last time you went to a water slide park? There's one in New Jersey that Woody Creek. Have you heard about this joint?
Can adults just like go and?
Hell yeah! I think I'm gonna.
Probably not by yourself.
You look a little creepy if you're like 35 hanging out in a water park. You know,
that's what I'm worried about.
Water parks
and
Chuck E. Cheese.
You gotta bring a kid. But I'd still do.
Hopefully,
that
your own kid, not just
not some random kid.
A rental.
Yo, I'm just gonna borrow you to go to this water slide for a while, yo.
Just come water slide.
I'm not gonna molest you. I'm not gonna kidnap you. I just need to go into this water slide without looking weird.
Perfect. And now we got here in front of us. It looks like a brand new album. New release, is that right? You got a new album?
A comedy music record.
I released an album, guys. I released a 7-track banger, and I'm in love with it. It's called Dreams Never Die. Check out the cover. Can you describe the cover?
Yeah, the cover. What is it? A pelican is shooting lasers.
Yeah, a pelican shooting lasers.
Sounds
I've always tried to write. Yeah, yeah.
Look at the pelican.
The back's pretty dope.
That's
some of the tracks
Thunderbolt
on there.
Your Coney Island out there?
Yeah, that's Coney Island. That's where I shot the bubblegum video.
Right. You have a variety of like different beats. Like, there's hip hop beats. There's go-go, which is like that distinctive kind of DC.
From my hometown, DC style. Which is like hip hop, but it's like heavy percussions. It's like funky drummer.
Yeah, there's
Danko,
rock.
You had a chance to listen to this. You're reviewing it for the magazine.
Yes.
What stood out to you? What were some of your highlights?
Well, Coffee and Weed. I'm in the video for the original version of Coffee and Weed with Rob
out
in Brooklyn.
Very cool.
R.I.P. Rick Minnello.
Yeah, Rick Minnello was
from Beastie Boys video.
And he passed away just this past year.
Just recently, yeah.
He was the guy that said, "You only play rock music."
Yeah, he's in No Sleep to Brooklyn,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, No Sleep to Brooklyn, yeah.
We only play rock music around here. And the director was good friends with him, and I invited you, and I asked you, and you were cool enough to do it. Remember that morning we were shooting?
Fun. Yeah, we had fun over there. That's a famous, Vox Pop is like a famous Brooklyn coffee shop, too, so shout out to them.
Yeah, you got Coffee and Weed, yes, indeed. And then what else is on here? I see, is that S'mores Sunset?
Yeah, S'mores Sunset is like an acoustic, if you like Sublime, I always like that... an acoustic acoustic guitar with just a funky electronic beat. Like, the producer that I'm working with is Tiger versus Cobra, and I met him. I used to do a podcast with like three top Brooklyn DJs that live over in this loft, and they have like a pretty like semi-pro studio, but they're super well knowledgeable. Like another percussionist lives with them. And I just built up a relationship with them, and they helped me produce the last four songs on my stand-up album. And then we went in and just did seven, like the whole goal was just to do seven like slamming tracks. And he sent me four beats, were like original, and one of them is Helicopter, which is just rhymes about helicopters. And it's, I think you'll dig it. It has a, like a steel drum, like this, this cat is really good. The beats and the, and just the production of the album like is up way beyond my musical level. But I also put together S'more Sunset, which is like the campfire song, which is kind of a pacifist song at the end of the day.
And you did that with Jessica Delfino, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you like to play a little bit of that for
yeah. the Oh, yeah. Love, yeah. Crank up S'more Sunset.
Cool, yeah. Let's give them a little bit.
Warm fire, hello, marshmallow, laughter bellow, sun yellow, then it turns to red jello in the sky. Oh my, why eat pie when s'mores taste so fly? Life is a beach with graham crackers in reach. Pass me the Hershey's chocolate bar. Watch it all melt like a supernova star. Hanging with my freaks while eating gooey treats. It's like tripping LSD, then you start to pee. This combination can unite the nation. Instant good time elation, emancipation from hippie chicks to...
Very nice. That's yeah. awesome.
All right. So hashtag dreams never die, at Rob Cantrell on Twitter. RobCantrell.com. This album, Dreams Never Die, it's available on Amazon and iTunes, right?
Yep, Amazon, iTunes, and it's $6.95. So I don't mean to be whoring, but I do believe in this album.
Like you if you're gonna get some,
you gotta hoard out, man. You know, and I do love it. Like I do know if it gets in the right hands, and I think stoners are gonna like it. The first track is like if you like Rage Against the Machine, if you like a heavy like rock, it has this sick. Nasty riff that we got to it that's all like a lot of people have just and it's all about the weather, and the weather is kind of funky. It's a track that you were rapping like weathermen, and that's called The Heavy Weather. And that opens it up, and there's all kinds of little sketches. Like I'm a huge fan of that Handsome Boy Modeling School, which is Prince Paul and Dan the Automator,
yeah, like the in between song kind of sketches.
Nice. Like when we did this, like the songs would be like B pluses, but when we put the comedy sketches on it, it would just be fucking insane.
Yeah. Shout out to Lion Eyes too, who appear on that Coffee and Weed remix. Coffee and Weed is such a great combo, you know.
This is the new track, right?
It's called the Live DC remix, and it's all new lyrics.
Cool.
It shouts out Headband, which is a favorite strain of mine. Is Headband still hip, Dan?
Oh,
I know
yeah.
it changes every other week.
People love Headband.
What's the shit on the street right now? What's killing it? Apollo 13.
Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, girl, which is a little bit of a creepy name.
Yeah, it's not the best name for.
I hate the creepy names like the cat piss.
Heroana.
No.
Green crack.
I like Granddaddy Purp.
What was the one in
God's
in
Pussy?
The, oh,
God's
God. Pussy. Yeah. Fellas, ladies, please, everybody.
Come
just
on, class it up.
Come
class
to your senses
up.
And name the weed after good stuff.
Yeah.
Green crack is not.
Well,
great.
God's Pussy would be pretty good.
Yeah, but, you know.
She's a female, but who knows?
All right, Rob. Well, thanks so much for stopping by. Everybody, do check out the new album,
Dreams Never Die.
Mike, Dan.
Yeah.
Big fan of Free Weed.
Awesome.
Oh, and keep an ear out for him. You're doing Doug Benson's Doug Loves Movies podcast in 2 weeks, right?
Yep, I'm going to go down there and record that, so that's a sneak. And then I'm also doing, for Normal, I'm going to be in New Jersey July. Just booked this July 9th at the Stress Factory for a fundraiser for New Jersey Normal.
Awesome.
That guy Max, do you know that kid? The
right
head
on.
Of New Jersey Normal, he just booked me on that, and I said I'd do it. So cool. I'm definitely for legalization and definitely support. I just want to say thanks to High Times for being out there on the front lines.
Great. Right on. Well,
thanks so much.
Tweet hashtag dreams never die, hashtag free weed to Rob Cantrell. We're going to give one of these CDs away to one of the people who tweets that at Rob. Follow him at Rob Cantrell, C-A-N-T-R-E-L-L. And we'll be back.
Light it up, smoke a do. What you gonna do when they come for you?
Mocha in High Times, caffeinated dope rhymes. Bristol wasn't kind, no help, so I put it on Yelp. Coffee cup in hand, lost in Amsterdam. Scored a fat bag at the cannabis command. Coffee and weed, that's what I need. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Coffee and weed, that's what I like. When I rock, when I rock, when I rock the mic. Just drinking espresso, more or less though.
Yo, can I get you guys to look this way?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first U.S. Cannabis Cup in Denver.
All right.
Thank you, Denver. This has been amazing. Let's introduce the
panel. Yeah, let's talk about some pot growing. Since it's legal, or getting there soon, right?
First up, we have a legend.
Yes. Mr. DJ Short, creator. Yes. If you're a pot connoisseur, you know what I'm talking about when I say DJ Short. Blueberry, the original Blueberry, Flow, Old Time Moonshine. To his left, Mr. Kyle Cushman. Yep. Of the Strawberry Cough and Veganics growing techniques and many other things. And he used to have my job.
And then we miss those days.
Then he wisened up and moved somewhere where he could grow legally and make his own nutrient line and all kinds of stuff we'll talk about. To his left, Colorado resident now, Mr. Adam Dunn from TH Seeds. Cushage, sage and sour, also the hemp hoodlams,
yeah,
you guys see.
My favorite coats, you guys,
the warm coats.
Check them out.
To Adam's left, Don from DNA Genetics. Yeah. I should mention Aaron, the D and the A in DNA, Don and Aaron.
They've been cleaning up lately, great stuff.
Amazing strains, the LA Confidential, the... Yeah, you guys know. And sandwiched in between them, Mr. Local Hero here, Scott from Rare Dankness. Winner in Amsterdam of the Sativa Cup for the Moonshine Haze and the Ghost Train won here last year, I believe. So, yeah, Scott, welcome. Thanks for being here. And
yeah, congrats. Let's hear it for this panel.
Yes. All right. We should also mention DNA has an offshoot called Reserva Privada that's been winning awards as well. These guys are in the building, so shout out to them.
What's up, boys?
Now, have you seen phenotypes of your strains that you were new to you?
I've seen
grown by other people.
I've seen phenotypes of Kosher Kush in the past since the LA Cup that I personally think are better than our mom.
Wow.
And, you know, I know there's some entries, some other people entered Kosher Kush here, so if y'all got it, show and tell, please.
Cool. Well, I don't know, you know, most of you guys are probably, I guess, more on the advanced side, and since we have such an illustrious panel, I want to kind of talk to these guys a little bit about the breeding process, and I'll start with DJ on the end. Tell me a little bit about what goes into the selection process of creating a new strain or refining it or whatever it is that goes into that for you.
Sure. I guess I should mention how I judge herb. All right. That's really important because I judge herbs strictly by the effect of the finished product. Everything else, its growth structure, flavor, color, is secondary to the effect of that finished product. Now, say, for example, you're doing an R&D work and you have two things that are very similar in the effect of their finished product, but one has much greater flavor or is more productive, well, by all means, you would go with that plant. But basically, that is my primary criterion, is the effect of the finished product, and that's not until it's harvested, dried, cured. And I test for 6 months because one of the factors that I work toward breeding out is what I call the burn burnout factor, or what's referred to as tolerance threshold. Now, certain heavy-hitting indicas are novel for a while, but they get boring really fast. I can say I've been smoking my blueberry for over 30 years, and it takes much less than half of what I was accustomed to get the same effect. And that takes time. It takes a lot of time to figure out, test that in that regard. So I don't know if that answers the question or not, but
well, what about actual physical selection? You know, to choose the plants that you're going to continue on with.
Correct. Again, it's by the finished product. Yes,
okay.
It's not by how the plant looks or grows. If it is something spectacular at the end, it's something I want to keep working with.
Okay.
Well, I'll differ with DJ respectfully. You know, everybody, you know, different strokes for different folks. I really look for plants that kind of provide, have to follow it, make my list in three categories. And it's growth, flavor, and potency.
So growth, structure, and flavor.
Because what I really want is, you know, I'm really thinking about the novice grower. I'm really just thinking about the everyday Joe who's growing for the first time. And the most important thing is to succeed the very first time you try so that you get something for your efforts. And so that's just kind of where my own personal taste lies. I want something that grows really easy, and I want something that yields really well, and then I want it to be very, very smokable.
Adam?
Yeah, selection is pretty much the most important part of breeding, and I think a lot of people don't really understand why the seeds cost a lot or what we're doing, and sometimes people just think, you know, it's so easy, you can just take this and put this with this, but it's actually about it's about waste. You know, you've got to like go through like a lot of, you have to learn how to kill things, you got to learn how to go, a lot of people just fall in love with everything they grow, you know, and that's a problem. If you're doing the selection, it's the hardest part is to cull the plants out, you know. It's like I'm lucky enough to have my mom help me out a lot of times, and she's pretty much on my ass, and I'll say, nah, you know, this one's really nice, and then she'll be like, kill it now, you know, she knows, because, and I'll be like, wow, mom, you're so ruthless, you know, but it's actually good to have, I mean, as part of the game, it's almost like you're reversing everything, you're going backwards in time, because you're looking at what you're looking at now, and you're trying to go back to figure out what made it that way with the plants, and you were lucky enough to be able to cross things back with the parental line, which you wouldn't do normally, obviously, right, would you?
But not in nature, right?
Not, you know, not normally, but anyway, we have a chance to go back, go look at the grandparents of the plant, basically, and select out what we want. So, and one of the things I like to select for, because of all the problems that people seem to have, is with like powdery mildew and pests, because powdery mildew is one of those things where you can have a bunch of plants in a room and one of them is infected and the one right next to it is not. So it's pretty obvious that is the plant you want to be growing and you want to get rid of the one that is affected. And some people just like they'll have a sour diesel that always goes powdery mildewy or whatever, can't get rid of it. Well, it'd be probably a good idea because all the other plants are now becoming affected by it. So that's something I'm like concentrating on, especially for here, just because when it hits people, it's very dry here, so normally you think it wouldn't hit, but I've seen rooms that have just been devastated, and you know, that's like actually like the easiest thing to fix by just growing something that's not gonna get it, you know.
Cool. Don?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, selection is definitely the most important part of the whole process. Like Adam was saying, I mean, you can identify, you know, mold-resistant plants and bug-resistant plants are more resistant than the other plants based on your selection, and that's key. Also, I mean, when you're doing a selection and you have a cross that you've, you know the parent stock and you're thinking, wow, this is really going to be something interesting. You know, it doesn't always work. And that's also part of breeding is you can't just, you know, we don't just have one breeding project, any of us at one time going on, because if we did, none of us would be up here because it doesn't work like that. You know, you have to have multiple breeding projects. Sometimes you think, wow, this strain and this strain are going to be great together. And it's just not the case, and that's through selection. And when you find a strain that can be marketable to the public, which does grow, it is an easier plant to grow. If it's not an easier plant to grow and it is something fabulous, we just put that on the packaging and let them know that it's for the expert, and you know, that's the case. But nowadays, it seems with all the seed companies that are popping up, it seems like it's really a lot of, you know, making feminized seeds of elite clones, you know, and a bunch of this let's keep making feminized of everything, and we'll just call it something else. And that's also cool because you guys get elite clones that maybe you won't be able to get in your hometown, and you can grow them. We do that as well. We have a lot of Kush crosses and different things that we've made from elite clones. But those ones don't really, in my opinion, I think it's the same with Aaron, those don't really affect us the same way as, let's say, a chocolope, where we created the cantaloupe mother years ago and then created the chocolope. And then from every step of the way, we've selected and we've gotten to the point of the chocolope compared to kosher, when you get a clone from somebody and then you fem it and then you put it out there and make it famous. That's also great for the public. It just isn't so much for the heart as much. So that's also the cool thing about selection for us.
Cool. Scott?
I think I've been very fortunate coming up in the medical industry that was established in Colorado. Most seed companies that are around today have very small populations they're able to work with. We were able to kind of, you know, have multiple gardens with multiple people, having, you know, multiple strains constantly working on things. And then when the medical industry came about in 2009, all of a sudden you had people signing you up to be their caregiver or to come into your facility and sign you up. So it gave us, you know, thousands of plants to be able to choose from. And now, with the greenhouse industry that's starting to kind of boom in Colorado, it's giving us, you know, just amazing room to make selection, amazing results just from getting to grow plants under the sunlight. I feel super fortunate. I will say that on another side, we get to test a lot of our stuff here. We have a lot of testing companies like Can Labs and Herbal Synergy, and there used to be Full Spectrum Labs and, you know, RM3. So, you know, we can throw a lot of stuff. Sometimes you have a plant that, you know, doesn't look that special on the outside, but when the lab results come back from it, you're like, oh, okay, maybe we should keep it around, look at it a little bit more, work with it a little further. And just to end it, I don't do fem seeds, Don.
You will. That's it. Well, in Europe, it's like you can't sell regular seeds, right? I mean, you guys will all concur that
you can sell them. You just don't sell a lot of them.
Nobody buys them.
Right.
Yeah.
Selection. I don't necessarily believe that the end product has to be strong. I'm more of like, just with some of the selections, like chocolate, for instance, there was just from like week two of flowering, you could already smell the specialty of the plant. So it's not for us, it's not necessarily about like strength. It's what the end user is going to actually enjoy. I mean, like, there's other traits. I mean, like, not all strains. Slee Stack, for instance, not one of our biggest yielding strains, but maybe one of the most resinous. It just, some traits, you know, get passed on, and that's what we're actually looking for. So when you guys buy our seeds, that's what we're breeding for, you know. We're breeding for what we put on the pack. But I agree with every one of these people's opinions because, you know, Adam, we got to kill, bro. We have to play God. And, you know, and it sucks because there's plenty of other seed companies out there that don't know how to kill. So anytime they crack a seed, then you have a new strain, you know, and it keeps on going. You got to learn how to kill. You got to learn to know what you want, you know. I'm
it's
big
Aaron
on
from DNA. Everybody remember, we have to learn to kill.
Learn to kill, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just joking. We're great friends. I'm just totally joking.
Kyle kills lots of plants.
That brings me to an interesting point. And in any of these competitions, in any time we have these cannabis cups and stuff, and people are judging strains, a lot of times the same strains will be entered into the same category, but grown by different growers, and at that point, you're not really even judging the strain anymore. You're kind of judging the grower. And really, like he said, when it tastes good, you know, halfway down a joint or all the way down or the fourth bong hit that you took, that's when you kind of know there's something a little more special about the way it was grown. And I also believe that a lot of that, and obviously these guys will go into this, but it's about the flushing process and it's about the curing process, but it's also about not overfeeding the plants. What makes a cannabis cup winning entry versus, you know, the lower end, what people call work or whatever, stuff they don't want to smoke, but
I'll take that one down here.
Okay, yeah, we'll start with you.
Can you repeat the question?
How do you win cannabis cups, and tell everyone how to do it so they can cheat you next year?
I think, you know, when you're judging so many strains, I think it comes down to a taste factor and something that smells. You spelled that wrong. You know, flushing, yeah. You know, if you can't flush your plant for 14 days plus, then, you know, you're not really flushing your plant.
That also requires anticipating when you're going to harvest 2 weeks prior to that. A lot of people, the harvest time sneaks up on them. You have to actually schedule it and plan it.
Right.
And start the flush 2 weeks before that.
You got to know your varieties. Right. And without, you know, knowing your cannabis.
You got to grow it to know it.
You got to grow it to know it.
Well, you know, for me personally, because I do a lot of small grows. And for me, well, I haven't won a cup yet. I've got a couple of second and third places. And maybe someday I'll be as good
as
these guys.
Those are wins.
But for me, it's focus, you know, it's focusing on, it's not growing a room with a whole lot of strains for me, because that's how I miss the window that Danny was talking about, because you're focusing on these bigger plants over here and you forget that the smaller ones are going to finish quicker. I forgot to start flushing last week. So it's about focusing on a fewer plants and fewer strains for me.
When we're talking about flushing, we're talking about taking that last 2 weeks to a week or so before you harvest and just using plain water. It really also depends upon the medium that you're using. If it's rock wool or hydroponics, it might happen a little quicker. But with any kind of a soil-based medium or soilless mix, like a peat moss kind of mix or anything, cocoa, anything like that, you want to use plain water for the last week to 2 weeks, hopefully, to leach out some of the excess nutrients, salts that you have built up in your flowers as they grow. So, and that makes it burn less harsh. It makes it so that the if you're smoking a joint, it'll burn to like a nice clean white ash, and it'll you know, it'll taste good, and it'll continue to burn. It won't constantly go out and be like a piece of charcoal you have to keep relighting. I mean, everyone has encountered that, and that's basically poorly flushed, overfed pot. So, done.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, another thing that Aaron and I do is we don't make some decision of what we're going to enter months beforehand. You know, I mean, we don't decide what's actually getting entered till the day we're entering it, because we have the, you know, there, of course, there's the top three or four that we know are going to be, okay, those are sativas, those are indicas. But at the end of the day, you know, maybe the LA is going to be better than the kosher this time, which it hasn't. But so then we'll enter that, and maybe it smokes better. And so then we get the crew together, whoever's in town, and usually a week before or a few days before the cup is we have a puff out, and we have our own little kind of cup, and we make a decision together what we think we should enter, not based on an ad we put out already or something else. It's just, yeah, what we want to enter as the best shit. That's it. And that's why we win. I mean, that's why, not in a cocky way, but that's why we're the last ones there, and that's why it ends up being a win, because collectively, it's not just two of us deciding, it's a group, the crew, you know, the DNA army decides.
Adam?
Yeah, I think that timing is obviously the most important thing, and a lot of people, I mean, I've seen so many cups where people come in with like wet weed that just got dried, and you're like, well, what's the point of that? You know, you're definitely not going to win, because number one, first thing you're going to do is say this stuff's not ready yet. And I mean, I've seen some poor examples, not so much here. I mean, I'm just talking over the 20 years that we've been doing the cup, and I mean, a lot of it came down to the fact that somehow these people didn't understand that there's a timeline, meaning you have to enter it at a certain date, meaning it has to be finished at a certain date, which means it has to have time to cure. And curing is probably the most important part, whereas a lot of people, you know, you can grow great weed and you can ruin it really fast too. So it's like taking that little extra step, which is about a month of time, let's say, you know, at least 2 weeks before the cup. But I would say you're better off having at least a month, if not more than that, if not 6 weeks. And it's all just, you know, maintaining the right you know, that right atmosphere for this plant. You might have to burp it a bunch of times, and a lot of people just don't go through those little extra steps, and I think that's probably the key to winning a cup. Actually, I've had other times, though, where I've cured it too much, and then it lost that little wang that they were looking for, you know, and then, so it's really like knowing also, if you are talking about entering a cannabis cup, it's a little bit about knowing what they're looking for, because maybe they're not looking for what you're doing. I mean, I've seen people grow great, great weed, but like I said, they cured it just a little too long almost, and it lost its pizzazz, and now it's great weed, but it's not going to win a cup, you know? So I think that's a good example for people.
Cool. Kyle?
Overcure, undercure, you know. I really, what exactly was the question specifically?
How do you win cups?
How do you win cups?
Well, I just said I haven't won one yet. So.
Well, you have.
No.
Well, let's talk a little bit about flushing and curing.
First off, if you're using crappy nutrients that contain monoammonium phosphate and diammonium phosphate, known as MAP and DAP, well, you're not going to win a cup. And it doesn't matter how well you cure it, because I still won't smoke it. And if any of you out there get that headache at the end of the night when you smoked weed all day long, that's a MAP and DAP headache. I don't ever get a headache from weed, ever. I can smoke weed from morning, noon to night. I don't ever get a headache from smoking weed. Weed cures my headaches. What you put in is what you're going to get out, and absolutely the time you spend growing your weed, with all that time you spend growing it, you have to learn how to cure your weed. Whether you're trying to win a cannabis cup or not, just for your own enjoyment, and you'll almost never be purchasing cured weed out on the open market, because it just doesn't seem to pay for people to hold on to it long enough. And it's the same reason you don't get ripe fruit in the supermarket, because nobody wants to be you'd have to have some of it rot in order for some of it to be ripe. And it's almost the same thing when you're learning to cure. You're going to have to ruin some of it so you get the proper skills to know the proper moisture levels and to deal with the ambient environment, and whether you're going to leave it in the jar a little bit wetter or a little bit drier, and how it's going to end up months later. It's just a trial and error thing.
Yeah. Well, we recently had an article in High Times where DJ Short talked about his curing process and also long-term storage. So, DJ Short.
Okay. First, I didn't answer the winning the cup question.
That too, yeah.
It's on the same topic, and it's one
yes.
word. It's cure.
Cure.
It really is. It will stand out from all the rest, and if it's losing or its pizzazz over time, in my opinion, that's part genetic. Shelf life is one of the things that one of the objective factors that I look for. Actually, the five things are onset, duration, ceiling, tolerance threshold, and shelf life. Now, right now, my favorite herb that I'm smoking, herb, or not hash, and hash and herb are two different things, is my Vanna Luna cured for 3 years in glass.
3 years?
3 years, yes. The chlorophyll breaks down, the calyxes go gold, the trichome go to these wonderful red amber colors, the flavor comes out. But again, for cups, you want it to stand out. And a lot of people entering cups, they are entering wet herb. Now, of course, growing organic helps tremendously, keeping the fertilizer out of it as much as possible. But a good long cure. I mean, the blueberry that won the cup in 2000, Hank from Dutch Passion actually had ready in 99, but he missed the deadline. And he was like, what should I do with this? Should I sell it? What? I said, no, Hank, seal it up. Put it away. Enter it next year. He did, and it won.
Wow. Nice. And do you think that certain strains benefit from a longer curing process rather than other strains?
Yes, I do believe it's partly genetic, but
like
it also
sativa,
has to do with it.
I feel like the sativa dominant strains tend to
last longer.
Yeah, and tend to actually mature in ways that indicas don't when cured. So.
Correct. Yeah, the heavy-hitting indicas, I don't enter the cups, no offense,
no.
But my preference is for slow-onset herbs, stuff that takes a half hour to 40 minutes for you to feel it.
Creeper.
Creeper. And in an environment like this, one joint after the other, you know, somebody else's joint, two, three joints down, is getting the credit for the high I'm putting in there. But the cups are great. They're fun. This is a wonderful opportunity, I think, for everybody, and I really enjoy doing them, and I hope they continue to go on. But again, judging her 6 months, it really takes you to do that. Cure, the key word is slow. We can learn a lot from the tobacco industry or from the spirits industry, wine and spirits. I'm waiting someone to start curing in, say, oak casks or in whiskey barrels or in those types of things to impart even another level to the experience.
Nice. Well, you guys, welcome again to 420 Denver Cannabis Cup. This is monumental, and I want to get a shout out to you guys. Give yourselves a hand. I really appreciate it.
Denver, you guys, I don't know how many of you people here are local or not, but I just want to speak. You guys are pioneers in the true sense of the word, because
he lives in Cali.
Cali, where we voted down Prop 19. We didn't want legal weed in Cali. So I just really want to take a second to give you guys props for being pioneers and go ahead and, you know, showing the world that the day after legalization, nothing really is going to change like they think. The world's going to go on. Everybody's going to keep going to work. Everybody's going to keep going to school. There's not going to be more car accidents. There's not going to be more crime. You know, it's just the same thing. And a couple of years from now, the country's going to follow your lead.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
I think a lot of people, you know, especially in this industry, as it grows so fast. I mean, I've walked into places and doing some consulting and seen people who, you know, literally came out of their basement. Maybe they were growing 6-8 lights, and now they're in charge of a 200-300 light operation. And to be quite honest, usually they're not doing too well, because it doesn't work that way. It's not as simple as just taking out your calculator and multiplying it by 100 or something, because everything bigger has bigger problems and bigger challenges that you have to get over. I've seen places that are so underventilated as far as air conditioning and things like that, where they don't understand the fact that summer's around the corner and their whole thing that they've just set up and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on is definitely not going to work. You know, it's like, it's just a simple mathematical formula. And on top of that, it's a lot of times, you know, it's the same, like, people have to look at it a bit more industrial. You know, you have to think about things like you're doing this thing over and over and over again. You can't sort of set it all up each time, you know. And
where are you going to get rid of the waste?
And even with the manicuring and things like that, it sometimes it goes from this, you know, incredibly high tech thing, and then you end up in this room with people just back-breaking work trying to manicure, and or they're just using twisters and they're not, and there's no love, you know. So it's one or the other. Like, I mean, I think there's room for everything commercially. Yeah. So I think a lot of it is just, it's literally like Ford, you know, he just set it up properly. And that's what these rooms are a lot of times like. If you set things up properly, I mean, you have to go by code here. Everything has to be proper in the sense of building codes and stuff. But a lot of times I've seen places where, because of the building codes, they make them move all the ballasts, for instance, to, like, you have them all perfect. You know, everything's perfect, and they come in and say, forget about it. You can't have these like this. They have to be right next to the light, which then changes the dynamics of the whole thing. So it's a lot of, I think we're in that period where we have to have real growers who can educate the people who are trying to set the standard to why we're doing the way we do.
Hmm. Interesting. Hey,
can I ask the panel a question?
Yeah, of course.
I'm curious. Do you guys think that connoisseur weed can come from a commercial operation?
Yeah, of course.
Scott knows again, right?
Can I start? I don't think connoisseur weed comes from anywhere other than the tropics.
Wow.
Now, we're getting very close to making A-grade hash outside of the tropics, but A-grade herb comes from the tropics.
Wow.
Well, I'll disagree with both of those.
Like a really hot room.
I just got back from Hawaii, and everybody in Hawaii wanted to smoke my weed, not the Hawaiian weed. So, yeah, man.
Well,
I mean,
I should mention Scott's working with River Rock, where they have these big warehouses, and they hand water and hand trim and basically take the care and the time that it would take.
Let him tell me about it.
All right, I'll let him say it.
Sorry. So, yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I got to work in a facility for a full year that's probably one of the highest lab-grade built facilities in the state. It was all hydroponic. I'll argue with the whole you can't win a cup with Hydro. I've won 4 cups with Hydro, and I'm pretty sure these dudes have won some cups too with some Dro.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, it's all about that flush. It's all about how much time and effort and how much love that you're giving to the plants. If you've got everything automated and you're not in there, you know, it's going to come out like shit, you know, as soon as they start to harvest it. I mean, you know, if it's all automated or twisters, you're never going to get a good product. But
so you're saying that if you have in your right situation, people, you've got hand watering and you continue. Is that important?
Well, you know, not even just hand watering. I mean, you've just got to have people in there constantly loving the plants, you know, like in a good facility, you know, monitor it for any type of pest. In hydro situations, you make sure you don't have crazy spikes in the PPMs. You know, in
what about trimming? It's got to be hand trimming.
Hand
trimming. There's you know, two huge parts in growing. It's you know, it's the actual growing and flowering, and then it's what you do afterwards. I mean, you can take a beautifully grown crop and screw it up in, you know, 10 days. It's got to be hand-trimmed, can't be run through a machine, has to come off the stem when the stem snap. You can't be taking it off the stem when, you know, you get a little, you got to, like, get those stems to snap. It's got to go into a jar. It can't go into turkey bags. It can't go into plastic bags. I mean, which means you got to have a
lot of jars.
Jars. I had an awesome conversation with one of the wholesale representatives of Rubbermaid at one point, because I was trying to get their food grade, you know, 2.5 gallon thing, and I'm like, I need 1,000 of these. And he's like, you know, he's in Atlanta. Well, you know, what are you doing with these, son? And I'm like, well, I need to put a lot of weed in them, you know. And it was just like, you know, they have these set questions they're supposed to ask you, and, you know, he couldn't move on to the next question. He was just like, and I'm like, well, it's for a medical facility. And he's like, everything's legal, and, you know, medical's legal in Colorado. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I got to move back to Denver, you know. So, you know, it's really monitoring the cure, burping it. I mean, you know, I just pulled down the very first crop in a big commercial facility that I've grown in over a year. You know, I got to grow in the Spanish sun all last year, so it was awesome. And we pulled down this crop, and, you know, like 40 pounds of herb was gone in a day and a half, because it was cured right and it was loved right. And my boy Dredd, you know, who works in my room, hooked it up real proper, so you got to give him a shout out.
Nice.
But it can be done, you know. It just, it takes a lot of monitoring by people who know what they're doing.
Cool. Aaron, you got an opinion on that?
What was the question again?
I forget.
Oh, do I think that cups can be won with commercial weed?
Yeah, commercially grown.
I think a cup could be won with chemical fertilizer.
Yep.
No, we were past the cup question. What I asked was, do you think that connoisseur weed can come from a commercial facility?
It can, if you put your love and effort into it. I think connoisseur weed can come from a closet with some person who's never grown a plant before, you know?
Sure.
Maybe it's beginner luck, but I think as long as you give the love that you want to get back out of the plant, then you're going to grow some good weed now. Of course, when you go into a much larger facility, you're going to run into a lot more bigger problems.
Right.
Yeah, it's obvious that it's basically human contact is what the plants need to sort of respond to. And if you're doing a warehouse, obviously it's really hard to connect to 10,000 plants, you know. So that's
human contact.
Yeah, human contact. I mean, I think that's what the plants need. I mean, obviously it means you need to get in there and do something, because that plant cannot do it on its own. So
right. So
technically, if you think, like, I've seen people who have had rooms and not even looked at it because it's all hydro and it's all automated, and they're not even down there for 3-4 days, you know, and you're like, you come down and the pumps are running dry and the thing, you know, I mean, it's just, come on now. Obviously, the more contact you have, and that's why I think, I mean, I grow on soil 99.9% of my time. I mean, I do my clones technically on hydro, you could call it, but pretty much everything I do is on soil, just because I can sort of respond to the plant easier, because I can walk in the room and it's not like every plant is always the same, and I like to grow a lot of variety, so it's really hard to do it on hydro because you can't treat them the same, you know? So if you have six plants on a table and they're different on hydro, it's almost impossible to balance that system out because they're needy in different times.
Well, soil is definitely more forgiving.
Yeah, if I have 50 different mothers to work with at one given time, I can't, like, put them all in hydro and treat them all the same and, you know, get something out of it. You have to really kind of treat them separately. And I think, I'm lucky I got my mom to do all that, so there you go.
Adam, your mom rocks, bro.
She grows more killer weed than me, I guarantee you.
She grows killer weed.
Almost every time we win a cup.
You should always be adjusting your light. In a small grow, when you don't have all this overlap from rows and rows and rows of lights, where, of course, the lights can be way, way higher, and you're in a small room or a closet, you always want the lights to be as close as you can possibly get them without burning the plant. And that's going to depend on the wattage of the light, the size of the room, and also your circulation. If you have really good circulation going around and you have a nice good air conditioner, you can have a 1,000-watt light very close to your plants. And the higher the light intensity, the more grams you're going to yield, and the lower the internodal spacing is going to be.
Cool. Adam, do you have anything to say about lighting in general indoors?
I think we're at a different, we're kind of at a crossroads right now with lighting, where, you know, people are all into LEDs or plasma bulbs and things, but it all ends up going back. We're still not quite out of there. We still have to stick with pretty much HPS because that's the way these plants seem to respond the best. But I think, especially with now having lights that are adjustable, for instance, between 400, 600, 1,000 watt, I think that's a good way to use it to your advantage and pick a real prime, because moving lights is a pain in the ass, and most people don't like to do it, and they don't do it at the right time. So if there's a way to do it without that, just by, for instance, starting your plants on a lower light and then bringing the intensity up as they come up, I think you can build some pretty smart rooms now with needing a lot less adjustments. And one thing I'm really kind of, I think a lot of people overuse now, is everybody's air-cooled lights, everyone's all about air-cooled lights, and especially in these warehouse situations, there's no need to have air-cooled lights in a giant warehouse. You're talking about, you have tons and tons of air conditioning on the roof, and you need to create an environment, and part of the environment is, with the lights burning, it does create an environment, and it has, like, the moisture comes into the air, you can feel the difference. You turn the light off, you come in, and it's a totally different vibe, you know. So I think when you have air-cooled lights, sometimes it's almost too cold in the rooms, or sometimes you're actually cooling the bulbs where they're not designed to be cool. Those lights were designed to burn at a certain temperature, and that creates a certain spectrum. And when you start lowering the temperature, you are potentially adjusting the spectrum, and we don't know what we're trusting, so maybe you're losing a bunch of blue or you're losing a bunch of red, and the only way to do that is to have a PAR meter and check every single bulb as you're doing it, and most people don't have those. So I think people should start thinking about using a bit more of the open, like in Holland, most people don't have air-cooled lights. Most people are using just old-fashioned, straight-up, janky looking stuff, but at the same time they do pull off some incredible yields, because I think you know people just lose a lot. So I think even though it sounds good and it looks all tech, sometimes it's nice to go back to the old school.
I just like to look at it this way: one appliance to do one job. So if you've got an air conditioner, then you don't need some other appliance or apparatus to do the air cooling for you. So you just buy the appropriate size air cool. Different issues, just one appliance to do one job. That's the way I look at it.
Yes, please. Commercial production, correct? We're talking about indoors? Really? Why?
So,
outdoors.
Is the future, though, is it greenhouses with supplemental lighting?
Whatever. Or? I mean, I've been on a mission lately. I spoke at the Hash Bash, and I'm suggesting that we occupy this industry from the get-go. And the model I'm presenting is one acre, a little over 200 foot square. 4,000 square meters will hold 4,000 plants. That acre can produce 1 million grams of resonated plant material. Now, if we're growing for extract, you don't have to worry about manicuring. The plants we're growing are not tight-budded plants. They're going to be loose, leafy, and airy, and producing quite a bit of resin. Under that model, two able-bodied people can run that operation, or a consortium of people. So 1 acre, 4,000 plants, 1 million grams of resonated material. Let's keep the math simple. 10% cannabinoid, that's 100,000 grams of extract. All right? Forget about commercial production indoors.
What if you live in Alaska and you can't grow outside?
You can grow outside. outside in Alaska. They have very long days. You're going to need a very, very indica
big facility with a lot of money to be able to do it.
I think but a small acre with two people and very little money can do it. That's why I'm saying, please, can we occupy our industry from the get-go?
We're all giving differing opinions here, but you know what? Every one of them is valid, and that's the truth.
Well, the future of this industry depends on us. The future of this industry depends on us making sure, and as he said, the cost versus, you know, the production.
Somebody has to take advantage of that idea that you're of using all the open space. You know, we don't do it now for power. You know, I've heard crazy estimates of if we use some of the desert to generate power for this country, and we don't do that. Right. You know, somebody does need to take advantage of that and do that, but I'm not giving up my indoor garden.
Scott?
Yeah, we got a little bit of a tricky situation here in Colorado with that. We have a new hemp bill that allows people to grow hemp, which is an awesome thing, but any outdoor growing within 12 square miles or something.
You're talking about cross pollination.
Yeah, you're going to get crazy cross pollination.
So I don't think so. They grow hemp in France and they don't have that problem there.
Who's growing outdoor in France?
That's all they grow.
No, it's not. There's stoners in France growing their herb, and it's not coming up seeded.
In France they are the biggest producer of hemp paper in the world.
Yes.
If you had your plants anywhere near one of those fields outside, like, you're getting seeds.
Okay, I'd like to see it. You know, it's all talk and theory right now, but I haven't seen it happen yet. And there are other places that produce hemp as well that it's not being an issue. Yeah, and also, if you're growing for extract, the greatest hashes in the world, the greatest herbs in the world, the tropical herbs, were all hermaphroditic and were all seeded. It doesn't matter if you're making extract.
Right. So, actually, let's talk a little bit about extracts. That's obviously a very popular. You guys have been outside. You've seen the dabbing stations and all of that. Let's talk a little bit about that, maybe starting with Aaron. Let's talk about BHO, CO2, hexane.
Look, he's uncomfortable all wrong.
I'll be honest, okay? I don't make this stuff, and I give it up to the guys that do because they're risking their ass, you know, explosions, everything.
You prefer dry sieve?
Well, I like dry sieve. I'm not against the dab either, you know, and I'm not against water hash or bubble hash or ice wax. To me, it's all water hash.
Hand rub, too. Hand rub.
Charis.
Charis.
Nepal.
Yeah. Where there's plenty of seeds in that weed, too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when it comes down to extracts, you got to have something that tastes good, that holds the terpenes very well. You know, it's been less than a year right now, and we've been rocking the Tangy from our boy Tangy Dave. If you guys haven't touched this stuff, it's probably got some of the most incredible terpene you can find in cannabis right now. And when you make extracts with it, it smells just like the plant. Everything about it is exactly the same. Maybe it's even a little bit more concentrated, a little bit more powerful. But I think it all comes down to your starting material of what you're going to make. You know, I mean, you can get that look good, smell good, get you high good, Pretendica, and make extracts with it. You're going to get high, but you might not really enjoy the taste. And there's plenty of that extract floating around, you know, and yeah, we're pretty, when it comes down to smell and taste, Don and I are pretty picky, you know. We'd rather kill the plants if they don't have what we're looking for. And I don't know, I think most of these guys up here would agree that they want to smoke something that tastes good.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, man. Yeah, nowadays we have labs that specialize in making oil. You know, I haven't made oil in probably 10 years. But the technology, you know, every month it seems like these guys have some new little tech that they do. You know, they went from blasting cans a couple of years ago to where they're running in butane and recirculating systems. It's getting up to the point where it's becoming more medical and lab grade every day. long ways from the old black goo of the old ISO back in the day, you know. But yeah, it comes down to flavor. You don't want to smoke something that tastes bad, you know. You smoke some oil that tastes like a fillet of fish, I guarantee you won't dab that shit too long.
Don?
Yeah, I mean, I like all forms of extraction. BHO is good. You know, water hash is good. I mean, I prefer dry sift. If we could have enough dry sift.
Let's explain just to quickly, too, what is dry sift?
Well, I won't tell you how we do it, but basically it's just keef, but it's fully refined keef. So maybe you get a pile of keef, and then you extract only the resin gland, only the resin heads, and in the end you get a jar that, you know, you dump it on the side, and you just watch the resin gland just kind of roll. And it's just completely unadulterated with any kind of, you know, it's not watered down with anything. There's no water, there's no butane, there's nothing. It's just dry sift. As long as it's cured properly, I mean, that is my preference, for sure. You just can't ever get enough. You can't make enough.
Yeah, dry sieve is how I started in Amsterdam in like around 93, and there was no real water hash at that moment, and, you know, it was basically just kind of traditional old school way of making hash, but it was taking it to the next level after that and just basically refining it a little bit further, which it's not that hard. It's just time consuming and labor intensive. So that's like why they would, you know, it would always come from a third world country. Yeah, you lose. And that's the thing, is a lot of people, same thing as killing plants. It's like about losing stuff. Like sometimes people, everything's so valuable in their mind that they don't want to lose it. But if you're just losing the lower part of the quality of the product and you're just gaining, that means you're getting a better product in the end. So you might lose 80%. You might only end up with 20% of what you started with, but it's the bomb 20%, and you wouldn't want to smoke anything else. But I think also what I noticed when water hash came into the market, it made it nice because you could take a lot of product and kind of bring it up a notch because you washed out all the dust, you know, and that was one of the things that would lower the quality of the plant, was the dust that's in there. But at the same time, you're
talcum.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like talcum powder. And at the end of the... But you're putting it in water, and you need to get the water out. Now, luckily, Colorado's super dry, so for making dry sieve, or for making water hash here, it's not nearly as bad as where we were in Amsterdam. We would sometimes, you know, it could even mold on you while you were trying to dry it.
And you would have to... We have to wait, you know what I mean? If it's... You look at the weather report, and if it's going to rain in the next couple of days, don't even think about making dry sieve, because you have to create such an environment, and it has to be such the conditions that you could actually get the crystals to do what you want them to do.
Traditionally, like Morocco or whatever, they would always do it in January, like wait until after the season, cold. Let it sit outside, super cold, the water's cold, everything's cold, so it was a lot easier for them to work. But as far as like butane extractions and all of these, the newer concentrates, I'm actually quite happy to be here in Colorado, because I'd rather always, you know, I lived in Amsterdam for 20 plus years, and I've always felt like I was kind of at the source, you know, and that's what I wanted to always be at. I didn't want to be at the downstream from it, and I think right now with concentrates, Colorado's killing it right now. They're the probably, I mean, I would. I haven't been all over to every single place, but I mean, I was back on the East Coast, and it's sometimes scary to see what people are consuming, and that's, I think, where we need to, like, educate each other. Don't, you know, it's like friends don't let friends smoke shitty BHO. You know, if you see a thing crackling, tell them to stop. You know, I've seen stuff where as it hits the nail, I just be like, no, it's okay. I'm over it. You know what I mean? And it's, I think that's where we're at now, is we need to kind of, like, educate each other, make sure people are safe, because that's where we could have a big, you know, backlash as far as from the average Joe who sees this as, you know, the first time that I actually tried to dab was in California with Big Dan, and at his shop there, and it was like kind of an eye-opening experience for me, because I just came in from Amsterdam and I really wanted to see what the scene was, and I saw basically really young guys all with torches in their hands sitting around a table, and it was like kind of like watching an experiment in action, you know, and I was like, what is going on here? And it was like, they would never allow that in Amsterdam, you know? I mean, Amsterdam's really, really, really strict about oils and things. They don't like the idea because it's, A, because of the explosion. They've had a lot of problems back in the 70s with people trying to make hash oil, old school style, with ISO, and they would blow the place up, and everybody lives right on top of each other. So same thing's happening here now with BHO. You see explosions and botards left and right. And I mean, I met a kid I pull up to a gas station. I see a guy, every single finger covered up. He's got bandages on his face, and I'm like, "So, BHO?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Wow, I just saw my first Botard. I can't believe it." You know, like, "Wow." And he didn't even know what I meant. I said, "Wow, you're the first Botard I ever met." And he was all, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "Go look it up. I can't tell you any further."
But 10 years ago, we were making hash oil in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And we just didn't know the process to turn it into what they turned it into.
Exactly. We were all playing around with it, and it kind of came and went because none of us really took it to the next level. But now, I'm glad people are doing it because it's all about evolution. You know, we're going to move forward, and I appreciate any concentrate if it's good.
I just want to say, just everybody, just please remember that it's still cool to smoke flowers, too, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, it all comes from flowers. That's the most important part, really.
Yeah, as a joint smoker,
I can't tell you. I've run into 24 people just in the last year. I don't smoke flowers anymore. You know, I'm showing them some of my flowers. Presumably, they're pretty good. I don't smoke flowers anymore. I'm like, what, are you kidding me? This is medicine, dude. You know?
Well, you know, the other thing that I think is a problem about it from a grower's point of view is that a lot of people are just taking shortcuts because they're like, it's just going to be turned into BHO anyway, and they don't grow it properly, or they don't cure it properly. That's or it. They don't do, or they just use it as an excuse. And I mean, I've even heard in California people calling it pre-run. To call it pre-run is like an insult, I think, as a grower. And I mean, the one good thing from a breeding point of view, it's actually quite nice to be able to use all the stuff that didn't work, because we end up with about 90% of the product we don't even want to use ourselves. And so for us to be able to turn it into something is actually quite useful, I think. But on average, I think to use it as an excuse to not grow good cannabis is a really terrible thing. So you should try to like stay away from using it as a crutch.
It's a lot harder to turn the best buds into BHO than it is to turn in something that's not as good.
Yeah, because you're going,
it's
painful
to watch. It's painful.
Fuck, let's never forget how good it feels to pass a joint to the left.
Yeah, and DJ, maybe a little bit of commentary about concentrates. It's not a dab panel. Bobby's got one of those, but we like to stay cutting edge.
Sure, I'm seeing very professional runs that people are doing now with the French non-sticky mats, and you're getting these nice round discs of amber clear product, and it's you know, decent, and it's testing okay. There's not things left over. So if it's done professionally, that's great. But again, I'm partial to hash, you know, and so are they in Afghanistan, Lebanon, Morocco, and Nepal. There's very, very little herb smoked in those regions. It's pretty much all hash. And again, I'm hoping that many of us will pursue that goal. Preferably outdoors again, because it's just sort of a no-brainer. It's just waiting there to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, the whole argument, basically, it's whiskey versus beer, if you want to compare it to the alcohol and spirits industry, or wine and cognac, mm-hmm. You know, where one is a concentrate and one isn't.
Cool.
One other thing is I've noticed is that maybe these people don't want to smoke flowers anymore because they can't get high off them anymore. And I've been smoking the same flower for 15 years, and I still get high off of 1 to 2 tokes in the morning. But I've met some people now that once you switch to BHO, once you switch to concentrate, see, that's what I'm talking about. There's a time and a place for everything. But if you're smoking nothing but concentrate, morning, noon, and night, 7 days a week, I think you just might be increasing your tolerance, and you may not be able to enjoy flowers down the road. So, you know, a little bit of moderation, you know, may be a good thing.
I think there's a nice psychoactive effect that you get from smoking a joint sometimes, you know. You can even be, in my opinion, I can have smoked, you know, wax a half hour ago, and then I light up a joint of kosher, and I'm high in a different way. Now, I'm not completely smashed like BHO, but I'm high, and I'm definitely different high, and it's a nice feeling. So I like all of it, you know.
Yeah, the thing is, it's we're also sort of experimenting every time we're making these things too, because you're not actually getting, maybe you might not be getting whole plant sort of extracts, you know. And when you make water hash or you make dry sieve, it's a whole plant extract because there's nothing else happening there. You're just taking out the resin. When you strip them resin with the solvents, there's a potential that you're losing something along the lines because what people are figuring out is that it's not one component. It's many components working together, and they have to work sort of synergistically. And I've noticed also with a lot of times with BHOs and stuff, you'll get like a really short, it doesn't last like hours. I mean, it's like a 10-minute buzz, and then you're back. That's why people tend to sort of smoke all day long because it's kind of a maintenance high. It's not the same. A lot of times smoking a joint, you'll forget. The key to knowing that you're high smoking a joint is when you look at the joint and go, wow, it's been in my hand this whole time, you know what I mean? And you just sort of forgot. That's if you're on it and you keep smoking it, that means you're not high. So it's just kind of like a natural little thing. And I think with the dabs, there's so much process going into it, too. You got to get your thing ready. You got to have your rig. You got to have your torch. Oh, I'm out of tane. There's like so much technical stuff going into it that a lot of times it's like I think people become addicted to the technical side and having the coolest rig or the coolest torch or whatever. And I mean, that's fun. I understand it. But it's not actually the point of the whole thing, which is,
it's the community. It's this culture that we have because of the flower, you know, and I just want everybody to just praise the flower a little bit, you know. There used to be, when we went to events like this, there would be these massive cannon joints going around. Now, there wouldn't be any good weed in. You didn't really want to hit it.
But the point was
that there were these huge joints everywhere, and it's a sense of community, you know, it's a symbol. I would rather be the joint be a symbol of our community than a borch.
All right, well, we're getting close to the end here. I want to make sure people know where they can find your seeds, or we'll start with DJ. Where would people find your seeds? Because I get this question a lot.
Yeah, Earth. I'm not here really in Colorado. There's certain legal obstacles, which has never stopped me before. Contact is simple, djshortseeds@yahoo.com. And then IC Mag, I have a help desk, icmag.com/IC down to the DJ Shorts help desk, and
cool.
You can find a lot of stuff there.
Awesome. Kyle?
Well, I just launched a new website, kylecushman.com. I'd like if everybody would visit it. It's going to be it's in its infancy right now. That's why I want everybody to join in on the message board. We're creating an online veganic cultivation community, and I just want it to be a resource for everybody. And if you're in the LA area, please visit us at Buds and Roses LA.
All right.
Well, mine's a funny story. You can order your seeds online with me, even though I'm here in town. Colorado's one of those places where it's sort of the chicken and the egg with the seed situation. So I'm not trying to go out there too far, because right now, until they get their rules clear, I'm just sort of stepping back and holding out. But you always can get them online from Attitude Seeds or from thseeds.com. You can kind of find out where the nearest distributor is. And if you guys want to visit me personally and just to come check out what I'm doing, I actually have a shop around the corner from here on Larimer and 34th. We are doing a cannival all week. We started on Monday. It keeps going until tomorrow night. So if you guys want to go out after here, we keep going until midnight. 33rd and Larimer. We have also Hoodlam there too, representing.
Awesome. Congrats on 20 years of THC as well.
Thank you guys. 20 more, sir.
DNAgenetics.com. You can get our seeds there. However, we don't ship to America, so if you really can't get them, you can just read about them. There are sites that ship to America that we can't really say in or endorse, but you can get them. Reserva Privada Colorado here has them. The clinic is selling them. Their version of our, basically, Reserva Privada Colorado, Reserva's view of Colorado. And so those are available at the clinic. You can get them now or at their booth. And yeah.
Cool. Scott?
RareDanus.com. There's a list of places you can pick them up. If you're in Colorado and you're a Colorado patient, you can go to River Rock, north or south, and pick them up. You can also find flowers by me every once in a while at River Rock when I'm
that
in town and I'm
boutique,
growing.
Boutique stuff.
Yeah, super boutique. Yeah, man, and then, your normal spots. You can find me on IC Mag. You can find me Rare Dagna Seeds on Facebook, all that social media
Catch
stuff.
Catch him on Duck Dynasty if you like, actually, too.
Duck Dynasty.
Shooting that Dang Dynasty coming soon, huh?
All right. Well, just want to say thank you to you guys. Thank you to you guys out here. We're going to air this As an episode of High Times Presents Free Weed from Danny Danko, it'll be available on iTunes and in podcast form at hightimes.com/freeweed. You can send me grow questions at deardanko@hightimes.com. And MikeHughes_ walking out the door. I'll see you at Red Rocks. And thank you very much. This is quite an illustrious panel. I hope you guys have learned something. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Woo-hoo! Thank you, Colorado.
We could go on for hours and hours, and we probably will at some point together at some dinner table or something, but it's been really nice to share this stuff with you guys, and I want to thank my panel here, and thank you guys, and thank Colorado for having us, and thank you very much, you guys.
Hey, you guys, as always, Free Weed is brought to you by BC Northern Lights. Now, what do? They make a premier grow box, several different options, also with touchscreen controls, all kinds of state-of-the-art stuff. Everything's automated. Everything is simple, and you can have Free Weed yourself at home with these grow boxes. They've got deals for Free Weed listeners, too. So if you mention the show, you mention Danny Danko, you mention Free Weed, you mention Mike Hughes.
They charge you more if you mention Mike
They charge you more if you mention Mike Hughes, so yeah. Don't do that. But mention the show, and you will get $100 off shipping, some free nutrients for 6 months, all kinds of deals that they have. BCNorthernLights.com and BC Northern Lights at 888-236-1266. Toll free. Get yourself a grow box and some seeds, and you'll never have to buy pot again.
Call them.
All right, so we are back, and we're here to wrap it up with Raw Papers.
This is the Raw Papers wrap-up, and we hope you enjoyed that panel. It was a lot of fun putting that together, and I think the audience really enjoyed it and appreciated it, and that was at the first ever U.S. Cannabis Cup, so very cool.
We talked about a lot of stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed that. If you did, come by San Francisco Saturday the 22nd at 5 p.m. We're doing another panel with some very prestigious guests, and we could do that as a live show as well. And yeah, thanks to Rob Cantrell for coming on. Hope to see you guys in San Francisco. If not, we got Seattle coming in September. What is that, like the 8th?
I believe it's the 7th and the 8th.
7th and 8th of September, we'll be in Seattle at Fremont Studios, and Boston Freedom Rally a weekend after that. And yeah, all that stuff. Hopefully Seattle
Just
Hempfest.
Keeps going. Then, of course, Amsterdam after that.
Amsterdam in November. Get your tickets now.
And I just heard, not 100% official, but Humphreys McGee is probably going to be coming and playing that
Sick.
Cup. So if you're into that kind of music, if you like the jam, check that out. Get your tickets. CannabisCup.com.
Yes.
And if you're looking for those travel tip do's and don'ts, please check out Dan and I's video on HighTimes.com. So, yeah.
So there it is. Episode 39. It's in the books.
Yes, sir. Oh, wait. One more thing. We actually got a really nice letter from some people who enjoy the podcast, and we'd like to just mention that real quick.
Yeah. Shout out to Drew, man. Got a great letter from your wife, Faith. This Drew Dude is his Twitter handle. And yeah, man, keep the faith. Thanks for listening. Thanks for everything, all your tweets and supporting the show. And apparently they drove across country from Cali to Georgia listening to our podcast, so that's really flattering and awesome, and I really appreciate
probably
that.
Probably kind of taxing on them, I would imagine.
I guess so. They got to hear me say and ah.
Without further ado. That's my new drinking game. When you say that, I just drink.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It explains why I've been a little tipsy throughout this whole episode.
Right on. Well, anyway, shout out to Drew,
yeah,
man.
Thank you, Drew.
And, Faith, thanks for the great letter. Thanks for the kind words. Really appreciate it. So, yeah, keep the faith. And right on. Episode 39, close for business. Put it in the books. So there it is. Episode 39. It's in the books.
Yes, sir. Books.
Put it in the books.
Yep.
We'll see you for episode 40.
Yep.
That's epic.
It is.
Put it in the books.
Done.
You have to have the last word, Mike.